Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street, Dow Jones Industrial Average down 49 to close at 17,081. S&P 500 down 13 at 2,003. NASDAQ Composite down 42 at 4,796. Yield on the 10-year Treasury down 4 basis points at 2.05%. Oil down 53 cents at $46.57 per barrel. Gold up $5 at $1,169.90 per ounce. Silver up 9 cents at $16.01. Anheuser-Busch InBev and SAB Miller have agreed on terms for a takeover, with the world's largest brewer set to pay $106 billion. The deal brings one out of every three beers sold worldwide under a single company. Under terms of the agreement, AB InBev would pay a $3 billion breakup fee to SAB Miller should the transaction fail to clear regulatory hurdles or if shareholders don't approve of it. If the deal goes through, it would be the biggest acquisition of the year and the largest in British history. SAB Miller's two largest shareholders, Altria Group and Bevco Limited, can receive cash and stock for their shares, which account for 41% of the company. They won't be able to sell the shares for 5 years, a move that might have tax benefits. Dell's $67 billion buyout of EMC appears to be a win for nearly everyone involved except EMC bondholders. Investors in EMC's $5.5 billion of bonds are down about $338 million since news of the deal first became public last week. Why is that? Well, Dell's plan to raise about $50 billion in debt for the acquisition will push existing bondholders down the capital structure. The notes lack protections that would have allowed for early repayment in the event of an ownership change. Further, consider that Dell will now have to service that debt to the tune of about $2.5 billion per year, money that won't be going into capital expenditures or research and development. Pepsi is competing against Coca-Cola, nothing new there, but this is for an investment in Chobani that could value the Greek yogurt maker at $3 billion, including debt. Chobani is looking to sell a minority stake to someone who could help it with distribution and production. The company ran into liquidity issues last year before an investment from private equity firm TPG. Wells Fargo has agreed to buy $32 billion in assets from General Electric and take on about 3,000 employees as GE retreats from financial services. The sale includes commercial distribution and vendor finance units and a portion of the corporate finance business from GE Capital, the transaction expected to be completed in the first quarter of 2016. Wells Fargo previously agreed to buy commercial real estate assets and GE's railcar leasing division. This is a major shift for GE from financial services to its manufacturing and industrial roots. To this end, GE has now divested $126 billion worth of financial operations. GE had previously said it would seek sometime in 2016 to apply to remove its designation as a systemically important financial institution. In the past 24 hours or so, we've seen more than $210 billion in acquisitions announced. Mergers and acquisitions on track for a record year. So far in 2015, there have been nearly $3.5 trillion worth of transactions. China's trade slump has extended into September, adding more evidence that the world's second largest economy is stalling. Dollar-denominated imports plunged 20.4% year-over-year last month, while exports slipped 3.7%, translating into a trade surplus of $60.3 billion. In yuan terms, imports fell 17.7%, while exports dropped 1.1%. China's official GDP data is due on October 19th. Separate data, however, shows auto sales expanding at the slowest pace in 3 years. Much of the import decline reflects this year's commodity price slump. Miners and metals are coming under pressure again. Glencore was down as much as 5% in London. The UK inflation rate turned negative again last month, dropping 0.1% year-to-year due to a smaller-than-usual rise in clothing cost and falling gasoline prices, although the consumer price index rate has been at or close to zero for most of 2015. The last time it was in negative territory was April. The Bank of England said this past week it did not expect inflation to reach its 1% target until spring 2016. The International Energy Agency, which represents some of the world's largest oil consumers, is warning that oil markets would likely remain oversupplied next year as oil demand growth slows and Iranian oil adds to supplies. The IEA cut its forecast for oil demand growth for next year by about 200,000 barrels a day compared to its previous assessment in September. The IEA said Iran's production could ramp up towards 3.6 million barrels a day from 2.9 million barrels a day currently once international sanctions are terminated early next year. Russia's economy could shrink 3.8% this year on the back of lower oil prices and international sanctions. Country's finance minister told CNBC that trade restrictions may not even be removed anytime soon. Despite a GDP contraction this year, the Russians expect their economy to turn to positive growth of 0.7% in 2016. Meanwhile, investigators in the Netherlands have concluded that Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 was shot down by a Russian-made anti-aircraft missile, causing the jetliner to break apart in midair, killing all 298 people on board. The Boeing 777 was heading from Amsterdam to Malaysia when it was shot down July 17, 2014, over Ukrainian territory controlled by pro-Russian separatists. The report does not say who fired the missile. Small business optimism continues to be stagnant. The National Federation of Independent Business said its Small Business Optimism Index was little changed in September, edging up 0.2 points to 96.1. That's still below the 42-year average of 98. Small business owners expect sales to decline, and the highest share since 2007 say they cannot find qualified workers. Switzerland's finance ministry will require Swiss banks maintain capital reserves of 5% of total assets. That's in line with the U.S. leverage ratio for its biggest banks and above the 3% minimum set in a global agreement by the Basel Committee on Banking Supervision. Since the summer, trading has been largely driven by negative reaction to growing evidence of a global slowdown. Last week, virtually every economically sensitive asset advanced, despite a slew of evidence confirming everyone's suspicions that the global economy is indeed decelerating. Instead, investors looked past the soft data and focused on Fed reaction to that weak data, as expressed in the minutes from the September 17th FOMC meeting. If the Fed obsession seems extreme, consider that fiscal policy is almost non-existent. And so, in a speech today at the National Association for Business Economics, Federal Reserve Governor Lael Brainard said that the risk to the U.S. economy are now to the downside and that it is important to nurture the recovery. Brainard said these risks argue against prematurely taking away the support that has been so critical to the U.S. economy's success. Brainard said there was a risk management argument in favor of a policy of watching. and waiting. Also today, Federal Reserve Governor Daniel Tarullo said he doesn't expect conditions to be appropriate to raise interest rates this year. We've now heard several different Fed policymakers offering different opinions on the state of the economy and the motivation to raise interest rates, and the only thing we know with any certainty is that Fed policymakers are not unanimous in their positions, and that means it's unlikely that we will see a rate hike at the October meeting. Michael Novogratz, the CIO of Fortress Investment Group's macro fund, will step down at the end of this year. His $2.3 billion hedge fund will be closed down. Assets will be returned to investors. Investors redeemed $800 million from the fund at the end of the fourth quarter last year, a quarter of its total assets. More redemptions followed throughout the year as key bets like Novogratz's long call on Brazil went sour. Fortress's macro fund was down about 17.5% through the end of September. Still, Novogratz will leave with a $255 million golden parachute. Earnings reporting season kicks into high gear this week, trying to avoid a second consecutive quarter of negatives. Earnings for S&P 500 companies are expected to have dropped nearly 5% year over year, which would be the worst quarter for earnings in 6 years. Johnson & Johnson reported net income of $3.3 billion or $1.20 per share, down from $4.7 billion or $1.66 per share in the year earlier period. Adjusted earnings per share beat estimates. The company said international sales decreased 13.7%, and that had a negative currency impact of 15.8%. J&J also announced it would double its share buyback program to $10 billion. The company will finance the repurchases with debt. J.P. Morgan Chase said third quarter profit rose 22%. The firm cut expenses and had $2.2 billion in tax benefits. Net income climbed to $6.8 billion or $1.68 per share. Adjusted earnings came in at $1.32 per share, 6 cents south of estimates. Intel reported better-than-expected earnings and revenue, even though both profits and revenue declined. Net income fell to $3.1 billion, or 64 cents per share, from $3.3 billion, or 66 cents per share, a year earlier, and net revenue fell to $14.4 billion from $14.5 billion. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com for live streaming and archived audio, the daily blog, text, audio, free podcast, and much more at eatthebankers.com. That's eatthebankers.com.